Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. With little more than 2 weeks to go before Election Day, a U.S. District Court ruled last week that Ohio's occasional purge of the state's voter registration rolls is illegal. We're going to talk about what that means today during our weekly reporters roundtable. Joining us, Statehouse reporter for Cleveland.com, Jackie Borchardt. Welcome back, Jackie.
Good morning.
Also, Dayton Daily News Statehouse correspondent Laura Bischoff. Welcome back, Laura.
Hello, listeners.
And Columbus Dispatch Statehouse reporter Jim Siegel. Welcome back, Jim.
Good morning.
If anybody has a question or comment about the voter rolls and what all of that means, give us a call. Don't wait. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Okay, so Jackie Borchardt, remind us, why were voters removed from the rolls in the first place?
So the state of Ohio has what they call a supplemental process for determining whether voters have moved out of the state or died or otherwise become, you know, unable to vote. And that process entailed sending a notice to voters who hadn't voted in 2 years. So after 2 years of not voting, they would send a notice, and then the voter would have 4 years then to either respond to that notice by saying, yes, I'm, you know, you've made a mistake, I'm still here and voting at this address, updating their address, because that was, I think, the most common reason that these notices were being sent, was because the address was out of date. Or, you know, go vote in an election, vote in a primary, a presidential election, a local election, sign a petition. All of that was considered to be voter activity. Mm-hmm. And if the voter had still not done any of those things within the following 4 years, then they would be removed from the rolls. And so that happens in odd years. The last time that happened was in 2015. And some, you know, There are varying estimates. We don't know for sure how many people had been removed throughout during that process, because the state doesn't necessarily track that. And, you know, we have a system in Ohio where every county has a board of elections that runs the show. And there's some variance over those counties, over how they report it, or even whether or not they do it. You know, some
so it kind of depends on the county.
Right. Some county officials were saying, well, we don't even do that, because it's just, it seemed to us as, you know, work that we didn't need to do.
Is this purge process, or the whatever it was that was found illegal, is it in a state law?
It's a federal. So it's a federal law. The Federal Motor Voter Act that's what the law is commonly called. It says that you can't remove voters for inactivity. And okay. Then elsewhere in the law, it says, but here states may develop their own supplemental process for, you know, determining whether a voter, you know, has moved. And that was essentially what the state was using this process for. And Secretary of State John Husted, who is a Republican, has said that he was merely continuing the practice that had been done for decades under previous secretaries of state from both parties in an effort to clean up the rolls. And Husted, just to note, back in 2011, you know, settled a lawsuit from a conservative group saying that Ohio's rolls were messy and unkempt and full of people who were not eligible voters. And so since then, his office had, by a court order, to take steps to clean up the rolls and to remove, you know, dead voters, people who can't vote.
But cleaning up the rolls and removing because of inactivity are not the same thing.
And that's what a federal court found earlier this year, that the state's process went too far, and that at the very least, that the notice that they were sending was not appropriate. It did not give enough direction to inform voters what they needed to do to ensure that they maintain their registration.
So why does this matter, Laura Bischoff?
Well, I mean, the right to vote for American citizens is sacrosanct and shouldn't be infringed upon. And it's a matter of, for a lot of people, if they did, you know, you don't have to vote. So if they didn't vote for a couple of cycles and then they want to vote in this cycle and it turns out they're not on the rolls anymore and they have lost their chance to vote, well, that's a big problem for that person. I think that we're talking about, I think, 1.2 million voters. So it's a large number of the electorate in Ohio. There's, I think, 7.8 million registered voters. I think there's still another, million or so that are eligible but never did register, which I find
Always strange.
Yeah, baffling.
I don't think there's a lot of disagreement about the goals that Secretary Husted and others have put forward here in trying to keep clean rolls. I mean, you know, if you're running if you're running any system, you want your data to be, you know, clean and accurate. And I think that's what they're trying to do. They are really trying to make sure that, you know, the folks who are in the system are alive, for one thing. That's a big problem, is we have a lot of dead voters on the rolls that don't come off in a timely manner. Historically, that's been an issue, and that the address we have them at is the correct one. And the problem is that, you know, it's hard. It's not an easy thing to do without running into some of these problems that the courts have cited. It's, you know, at what point do you go after, you know, do you say, okay, it's been too long, it is time to clean you off the rolls, you are clearly either no longer at this address or no longer an active voter.
You're no longer alive.
Maybe no longer alive.
The inactivity or the activity doesn't matter, right? That's what the judge is saying, is just because someone doesn't vote doesn't mean they're not registered to vote.
Right. And I think there is a a case to be made for that too. I mean, if you haven't moved and you just decided that in the last 10 years, or is, you know, you've just decided, you know, you have the right to not vote as well. Right. And if you just decided not to, but now there's a race you want to go show up for, I can obviously see the argument that why shouldn't I just be able to show back up and vote?
And when you do show up, I mean, it's not like these people, the dead names on the rolls necessarily is indicative of voter fraud, because they still have to show up at the polls and show identification, and everything has to match up in order for them to cast a ballot. And I think some of these smaller counties where the officials said, you know, no, we haven't done this supplemental process. I mean, that was their reasoning, was, well, there's no harm in keeping them on because, you know, the way the system works, you still have to check them out when they come to vote.
But ultimately, it's unequal between the counties. It's not clear that it's being executed in the same way across counties.
And there's been arguments, there's more voters on, you know, more people, what is it, more people casting ballots and there are voters on the rolls or something like that. But oftentimes when they talk about the potential for fraud, they're talking about registration issues. There's been very little actual fraud once the votes are cast. And so that's been an issue. And really the issues they've had more often with that is somebody they'll send in an absentee ballot and then forget and go to the poll and vote again. So those kind of things aren't fixed by the kind of cleaning up of the rolls that we're talking about here.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the federal court ruling last week that found that the process by which voter rolls are purged or cleaned up in the state of Ohio is illegal. That means, I guess, that those names have to be put back on the rolls. Still with me in the studio for our weekly reporters roundtable, Jackie Borchardt from TheCleveland.com, Jim Siegel from the Columbus Dispatch, and Laura Bischoff from the Dayton Daily News. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. So, all right, so they have to put the names back on the ballot, back on the rolls?
Not exactly.
Okay,
so,
all right.
Not yet. That may be down the road.
But how do they do that
decide?
When they don't
but as
even
of right
track?
Now, the remedy for this election is that if someone goes to vote and their name is not on the rolls, and they're allowed to cast a provisional ballot. And then those will be checked, you know, after Election Day and checked against voter databases. And in instances where, you know, some counties did keep track of who they polled, and they'll be able to do that quite easily. For the ones that didn't, you know, they'll check it with kind of like the state kept master list, so to speak, from previous years, and it will be assumed if the person is, you know, not dead and still living within the same county where they were registered, because that's been a change recently, is that, you know, if you've moved but you're still within the same county, you're able to still vote
provisionally,
yes, and have that count. So that's part of this as well. Then the vote will count.
Stacy in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, thank you. I have a question, not quite about voter rolls, but I have a very crazy family and work day on the actual election day, so I've been thinking about doing early voting. And I had heard that early voting is counted as absentee voting, and one of the repercussions of that is that if the vote is not within the margin of error of the number of absentee ballots cast, those votes will never be looked at. Is that true?
I don't think so.
No, I think I've early voting that. Is counted. In...
Early voting, the absentee.
She's
in the...
talking about provisional
and absentee.
And absentee.
Yeah.
But yeah, your absentee.
No, I know what provisional is. Yeah. I had just heard that.
Yeah, you're just talking about early voting.
Not looked at. Right.
Yeah.
So, nope, they're good.
Yeah,
I've not heard that.
My recollection is that on election day, they start out with the votes that were made early. They count them immediately.
Okay.
First.
All right. Well, good to know.
Yeah, they count those first, and they release those first on, you know, when the polls.
Those are the first
polls
returns.
Polls close at 7:30 or 7? I forget.
7, I think.
7. I mean, those the first results that come out in Ohio are always the absentee and early voting folks, and those are.
Those come out at like 7:31.
Yeah, something like that. And they're kind of all the counties kind of dump those results first, which produces a generally skewed first look at how the races are going.
And the campaigns rush to put out their press release saying they won the early vote.
Well, and State House reporters rush to write something up. Stacey, though, good question. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for clearing that up.
You
Have
bet.
A good day.
Ed in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Ed.
Hi. One of the things that I have a problem with, and I will admit I'm a Democrat to start with, is that there's a lot of confusion about what the Secretary of State actually does. I was a mailman for 29 years, and I had the same route for 27 years. So when someone would send a ballot or a request for, are you still there, our job was to do the best job we could to determine whether that person lived there, didn't live there, was never lived there, was deceased, and we had to write on each particular piece of information. Was this person unknown? For instance, there was a couple of times when I was on the route and I had never heard of this person. Maybe they were there 10 years ago, but they were not there during the time I was on the route. Write deceased, write move left no address. If it was forwardable, we forwarded it. And in all the time I was on the route, there was only one person who had moved and was attempting to keep his address on the route. So that is very, very minimal. But the Postal Service is a really main ingredient in trying to figure this out because they're the ones that tell the Board of Elections whether that person is actually there or not. Now, whether they have voted in the last few elections, that's something that we don't know. But it's our job to tell the Board of Elections this person does or doesn't live there, and if they don't, why?
That's interesting.
I would think that that would be effective with a letter carrier who's had the same route for 25 to 30 years. But in a lot of other neighborhoods, the letter carrier is not consistent.
Right. Ed, thanks for that. That's an interesting insight into the process. We will continue our reporters' roundtable. If you have voting questions, you know, bring them in, and we'll see what we can do with them. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Just 2 weeks before Election Day, we're all a dither here in our reporters' roundtable on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. If you have a question about voting issues, we're here to try to help. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jackie Borchardt, State House reporter for Cleveland.com, says she'll talk about voting issues all day long if she can avoid talking about the candidates. Once again, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Also with us, Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News and Jim Siegel from the Columbus Dispatch. Bob in Marysville, you're on the air. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Great program.
Thanks.
Hey, on this $2 million that are going to that were going to be expunged for the from the rolls.
I think it was 1.2 million. But go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, 1.2. Mm-hmm. Okay, I stand corrected.
Well, that's okay.
Often,
I know the feeling.
Of those expunged voters, will there be any analysis after the election as to how many of them voted, et cetera, et cetera? That seems to me would be a really good follow-up to this whole question.
Hmm. Well, is there any sense about that, Jim Siegel?
It's certainly possible. That would be an interesting analysis to do. I don't know if anyone yet has decided that's the route they're going to take, but I'd be interested in seeing that.
I think that the court remedy did indicate that boards of election are to record this somehow.
Okay.
In the and usually after the election, the Secretary of State's office collects all of that post-election data and issues a report on absentee ballots and a report on provisional ballots. So my guess is that it will be noted somehow.
Okay. Thanks, Bob, in Marysville, for that question. Jim in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Jim. Hello, Jim.
I'm Jim.
Yep, you're on the air.
Okay, I'm from Worcester Courthouse, not Upper Arlington. But anyway, question was, my parents were in a senior care facility in Columbus for a number of years. My father has been deceased 12 years, my mother 7 years. And my brother, who lives in Upper Arlington, had power of attorney over them and had the phone number if any emergencies or anything arrived. And last week he got a phone call to his residence asking for my dad. And he said, well, he's not here. What does this concern? And they said, well, he hasn't requested an absentee ballot this year. Mm-hmm. And he always requested an absentee ballot, which he did when he was in the nursing facility, but mm-hmm. he's been deceased for 12 years. Well, he was so shocked, he didn't think to ask who was calling or anything. And we just wonder if this is an ongoing problem. I mean, it was even after the date when you could request absentee ballots.
Well, that's probably why they knew he hadn't submitted his absentee ballot, I guess. But what do you think might be going on there? Just a party paying attention to who's...
Well, they might be working off a really old list, but also that it's not correct that the date to request absentee ballots is passed. That you can continue to ask for absentee ballot, I think, until the Saturday before the election, something like that. So, yeah. It could be all kinds of things. Maybe his dad had been a Democratic donor or Republican donor way back when, and so the party was looking to the party or the campaigns were trying to. Get out the vote. Certainly there's a big push for get out the vote. Mm-hmm. But that is kind of odd. 12 years is
that's
a big gap.
Yeah, that's a long time. That's a big gap.
Yeah, it doesn't speak highly for whoever, whichever party was calling him, doesn't speak highly for the accuracy of their voter rolls.
But there's nothing necessarily illegal about it. I mean, it's on the rolls who he vote. I mean, not who he voted for, but what if he voted in a primary election, then that's on the rolls. It's on the record. And that's not secret, so I wouldn't say who he voted for, but it is a public list. Jim in Washington Courthouse, thanks for that question. We're going to get to more questions about voting. There's lots of people with voting questions. It's a lot of confusion. I don't remember ever, before 2000, ever having so much, not curiosity, that's not, but concern about not understanding fully. Things have changed a lot.
It might have something to do with having one of the major party candidates, saying the system is rigged.
Oh, that might be.
Could be undermining some confidence. I'm just speculating here.
Okay.
And one thing to kind of underline a lot of this is the reason that this year and past years, I mean, believe me, this goes back a long way, that there's often legal fights over voter rolls and voter access restrictions, is that in the end of the day, it's a political argument as much as anything else, at least from those who are trying to enact these provisions. I mean, at the end of the day, in Ohio in particular, a higher voter turnout tends to favor Democrats. Lower voter turnout tends to favor Republicans. Both sides know this. And both sides then use that as their basis for their stance on how they're going to fight over various issues. So while there is certainly definitely some serious constitutional and voters' rights issues, you know, but there's, you know, that are fought over here. There's politics, as always, is kind of at the heart of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's autumn, so the leaves are changing and the voting lawsuits are flying.
And Annette in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Annette.
Hi. I was absolutely floored when you guys said that they began the process of purging people after 2 years. I have been an active voter for my entire life, but I know there's been a primary or something else that I've missed because there wasn't anything significant. And 2 years is, for one thing, it seems like it's making a lot of work for the boards of election. Another thing is, I don't think it's anywhere near long enough. I think it should be more like 10 years or something. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I don't vote in primaries, and I think you make a good point in a way. I don't vote in primaries to protect my, you know, the integrity of my vote as a journalist. But I also, where I live, there isn't always anything, always something on the ballot. So it's an interesting point.
Well, and I think just to be clear, 2 years is not when they start purging. 2 years is when they kind of start the process. I think she may have understood that, but I just want to reiterate
keeping track.
It's really the purging, I think, starts about 6 years, right, Jackie? Is it 6 years after? But at any rate, that is part of the reason this, you know, there's been these court challenges, is that and it's just part of it's a genuine question. When do you start to try to take people off the rolls? I mean, there is no, as far as I know, there is no magic year.
Well, is there a state that does it right? I mean,
I don't know.
Did the judge reference that?
I don't, I think Annette's right. 2 years does seem sort of like a blink of the eye.
Yeah.
And it could catch a lot of people. I mean, if you don't vote for 2 years and then you get that card and you miss the card because you don't pay that much attention to your snail mail, it could capture a lot of people.
All right. Annette, thanks for that call. David in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. What I was wondering, I live on the east side, and the polling place is over on Morse Road.
The early
polling.
Yeah.
Right. I was wondering, is there any organization or some number I could call to help with transportation? I don't have a car.
I imagine the parties have programs in available, but other than that.
Yeah, I would say I would call either the Franklin County Democratic Party or the Franklin County Republican Party, depending on which way you're leaning. I do know, I don't know, but I suspect that the early voting site on Morris Road is on the bus line. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if other groups, like, I don't know if the League of Women Voters or other organizations offer transportation services. It's not something I've heard about one way or another.
Okay, David, I think the parties might be a good start. Sometimes churches.
Souls to the polls.
Souls to the polls. That's a big thing the Sunday before, I think. Check that out for starters. It's a good question, though. Jim in Granville, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Howdy. I have a few points. One, on the Postal Service, my understanding is that.
Jim, you became very muffled.
Okay.
There you go.
With the Postal Service, I think the important thing is the Postal Service only tells the sender when a...
You're muffled again, Jim. I'm not sure what you're doing, but...
Okay. Is this any better?
This is good. Keep it right there.
Okay.
Okay.
That the Postal Service, they only verify that someone is not in an address. So if the Secretary of State does not receive any notice, that means... For all intents and purposes, the person is still living there. So it's that it's not, you know, that they don't hear back doesn't mean that person isn't living there.
Okay.
And I think that this whole effort to disenfranchise people who haven't voted since 2008 has me wondering if there were a lot of people who were moved to vote for Obama in 2008 and haven't voted since. And that somebody's figured that out, and that's part of this effort. And then the third thing I'll say is I'm a polling location manager in Licking County, and the idea that there's voter fraud is ridiculous. There is, with two parties present at the polls, there is absolutely no way that somebody can jigger the system. So I think we're back to it's just voter suppression.
Jim, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. And thanks for being a polling location manager. Thankless job. But I thank you now. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about voting. It's just 2 weeks away. The election day is. You can early vote. You can absentee vote. If you have a question or comment about the voting process, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Pam in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Pam.
Thank you for... Hello?
Hi, Pam, you're on.
Thank you for accepting my call. I was just wondering, these so-called poll watchers that do not work for the Board of Elections or either party or just standing there, you know, during the day, watching people that come vote, is that legal for them to do that?
Is poll watching
legal?
Well, let's ask the... panel.
Yeah. So,
Jackie Burchard.
Political parties and I think it's groups of like five or more can have poll observers present inside polling places, and those people are only allowed to observe. They're not allowed to. They can make small talk with poll workers, but they can't. They can't approach someone and challenge their vote. They can't take photos or video or sound recording.
But they can't actually see somebody pull a lever or push a button, can they?
No. Okay. I mean, they're not going to be standing behind you
right.
watching you vote. I mean, they can't.
I'm not quite sure what they're observing then, but...
Right. And then it is also, I think, important to note that on your way into the polling place, you might see people who are... And the people inside the polling place also cannot be wearing, you know, Trump or Clinton shirts. They can't, you know, be... electioneering for their candidate inside the polling place, but 100 feet outside of the polling place, they can. And I think that's where you'll see more, more action happening this year. I know it's because Donald Trump has made claims that the election is rigged, and that's, you know, kind of fired up a lot of people to be poll observers, but they actually have to be officially, you know, registered with the polling place. They can't just walk in and say, I'm a poll observer and stand over your shoulder and watch you vote. That's not how it happens.
Pam, thanks a lot for that call. Anybody else?
Yeah, just to say that the poll observer issue, although Donald Trump has brought it up here this year, this dates back a ways. I think we first started to see it back in earnest here in 2004. There was an effort to get observers put in there, there was court fights over exactly what they would be allowed to do. And it turned out that, you know, I think there was even a last minute court decision that really that allowed them, but they were fairly limited in what they were able to do. And Jackie gave a good description of that. These people who sign up to be poll observers who think they're going to go in there and demand that these folks produce additional ID or somehow intimidate them, that it's just not going to happen. No one's going to allow that in the polling places. So they may find that it's a lot more of a boring job than they had hoped.
That's why I said thanks to that poll.
I also think that, you know, you have to watch out for, voter intimidation. It's a very fine line. If you want to be involved, though, the state of Ohio needs like 35,000 to 40,000 poll workers. You can contact your local county board of elections. And, you have an opportunity to do your civic duty and, you know, log a 14 or 15 hour day for minimal pay.
And also know that there'll be observers watching observers. There's going to be multiple layers. The parties both have people that they'll have attorneys and other observers. The media, I know that the dispatch, and I'm sure others as well, will probably be to some degree fanning out to various precincts and keeping an eye on things to make sure that there aren't intimidation issues or other problems that pop up, and we'll of course be keeping a close ear to, you know, because that's the thing. Once there's a report of intimidation, one party finds out about it, they don't keep it a secret. They tend to let everybody know, and so it tends to get out there fast. And in this age of social media, it gets distributed very quickly. That if there is an issue.
Peg in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Peg.
I just wanted to answer one of the questions that the postal worker.
Mm-hmm.
It in fact is possible for somebody to be registered and doesn't live at an address. It's probably a member of the military or someone who lives overseas, and they can vote from their last address that they consider to vote. Mm-hmm. And they could vote there for years. And that's absolutely legal.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate your time.
Hey, if anybody has real problems,
mm-hmm.
Either legal or procedural, there is an 866-OUR-VOTE number that they can get legal help, or they can just get, well, what the rules are. 866-OUR-VOTE's easy to remember.
Yeah.
And it's nonpartisan. And it's already up and running.
Who administers that?
It's nationwide. It's the Lawyers Committee in Washington. But in Ohio, it's a bunch of the advocates, League, Common Cause, Our Vote, all those folks.
Hey, Peg?
Yeah.
Is this from League of Women Voters?
Yeah.
Hi, Peg.
Hi, Peg.
Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
This is Peg Rosenfield from the League of Women Voters. Corey from Columbus and Brian from Upper Arlington both called in to correct a comment about absentee ballots and early voting. And I think we got some blurred lines here. They said that early votes are counted on the morning of election and are considered the same as absentee ballots.
Yeah, I'm not sure if, yes, they can do that. They can count all of them, but they can't release the results until the polls close. So you're absolutely right.
Okay.
The first votes you hear are those, and they do, just like Jim said, they skew the results. But you get those usually about 8:30, and yeah, they're the first results. And yes, they are all counted.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Peg. We appreciate your call today.
Oh, I never miss you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That makes me feel really good. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll continue our conversation just 2 weeks to go before voting day. It's our State House reporter roundtable this hour. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. We're talking about voting rights issues today and what your rights are as a voter. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We have an email from Michael. He said, in our mail-in ballots this year, my wife and I noticed an insert that said one stamp, 49 cents, would be enough. A few days after mailing our ballots, my missus said a friend of hers said that the inserts were a misprint and that ballots this year needed two first-class letter stamps, not one. So what is it? One stamp, two stamps, and what about the ballots with insufficient postage? Anybody have a...
It's two.
It's
but
two stamps.
The board has said we made a mistake and we're going to count all the ballots.
Wow. But are they going to all get delivered?
The post office has said yes.
Okay. Yeah, they've been instructed to deliver them with
I had not heard
postage.
About that.
Yeah, that's and again, this also goes to this also goes to another factor in elections. People who want to talk about fraud and things being rigged. At the end of the day, remember, elections also are run by people. People make mistakes, and things are never perfect in elections. And this is a good example of that. I mean, mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, they realized it and they fixed it, and they're going to say, "Look, these things are going to get to us,
and we'll pay the extra
and we'll pay the extra postage."
Okay, so fear not.
But it's yeah, but it, but yeah. I mean, things go wrong. We're trying to count, you know, millions and millions of ballots and. things aren't always perfect.
And let's remember, the legislature decided to bar county boards of elections from paying return postage, which would have solved that problem of, do I do one stamp or two? But that was stuck in one of the election reform bills.
Yeah. See? Email from Mike. My mother lost her absentee ballot. What next? Can she request another? Can she just go vote? If she hasn't mailed the absentee ballot, she can just go vote. Are you sure she lost it?
And no,
if they sent her an absentee ballot.
Oh, she requested an absentee.
Right. And if she has it in her possession, she needs to either, you know, fill it out and mail it in or drop it off in person at the Board of Elections. And if she does not, then she'll have to vote provisionally because it's marked in the poll book that she received an absentee ballot. So if she goes to the polls on Election Day, she can cast a provisional ballot, but then that won't be counted until after the election when they can verify that, yes, she never sent that absentee ballot back in.
All right, whatever she does, do not vote the absentee ballot and then go to the polls and vote a provisional ballot.
Right.
That can get you into some trouble.
You will be summoned to court if you do that.
Yes, but a lot of times it's just people forget.
Yeah.
They forget that they've done it. Okay, I'm working on my calls here. Marilyn in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was listening a while ago, and I heard you ask about bus routes, first of all. And if they take the number 2 on High Street to 95, that gets them to Morris Road.
Okay. Thank you.
The other thing I wanted to say was my husband died. He was a regular voter, and he died in September. And by the time I came to the polls in November and checked the book to see if he would notify them that he had died, they had already removed his name, probably by his death certificate and Social Security number.
Okay. So they can do that.
They
figured that one out.
They either check you by Social Security number or driver's license number in the poll book.
Okay. Marilyn, thanks for that call.
Thank you.
Alex in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question slash concern regarding Trump calling on his supporters to kind of come out to the polls and watch everything, and it kind of leads to the intimidation we were talking about and suppression earlier. In states where open carry is legal and encouraged, you know, states like Texas, where we've seen some of these militia-type squads do some questionable things in recent years. Is there any concern that these brigades would bring arms to polling centers and kind of stand outside as like a, you know, just an intimidation of a group of people, you know, holding rifles and
walking down
legally? Is there, you know, like with Planned Parenthood, if someone's going to be protesting or picketing outside there's a certain amount of, you know, feet that they need to be from the premises. I was wondering if there's any laws on the books that kind of regulate an open carry situation like that at a polling center.
Jackie Borchardt.
Well, if they're not going in to vote, they have to be 100 feet from the polling place if they're, you know, demonstrating any sort of capacity. If they're, you know, even just handing out pamphlets, that can't be done within 100 feet. And I know boards of election are taking some precautionary steps to ensure that I know up in Cuyahoga County, for example, they are planning in talks with local law enforcement there to ensure that police can be dispatched to polling places as needed, immediately. I mean, it's certainly a thought that is being incorporated into planning.
Hmm. Yeah. And also, polling sites, for example, that are at schools, polling sites that are at churches, some other nonprofits that also may say no guns on the premises, that will also limit where folks are able to open carry. Ohio is an open carry state, but you can't just do it everywhere. And so, is it going to be an issue? I have no idea, but I'm sure, like Jackie said, I'm sure there are, if they're smart, there are some precautions being taken and at least some awareness that they may need to handle some issues at some scenes.
Alex, thanks a lot for that call. Joanne in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Anne. Question, it has to do with literature signage that can be displayed at the polling place.
Like inside the polling place?
Yeah, inside. Okay. Mm-hmm. And my experience with the last presidential election, I vote at a Catholic church, and there was nothing that named a specific candidate or party, but there was a large sign that said, vote pro-life. Now, I asked the polling people if that was permitted. I mentioned, you know, not supposed to have influential literature, and they said, well, this is a Catholic church that we follow Catholic directives, and we have that sign up all year, and, you know, we're not taking it down. So I wondered if you had a comment about that.
Laura Bischoff?
I would think that if somebody made a complaint that that polling place would be required to take that sign down, and if they decided they didn't want to take it down, that the polling place might be moved for future elections. That's just my thought on it.
Okay. Yeah. And just as a sidebar, when I got home, I called the Board of Elections, mm-hmm. and there was no one there to respond. Mm-hmm. And when I left a message, when they called me back the next day, they said that, I think they said they were closed down on Election Day. And I said, well, then how does one make a complaint if there's something amiss? And the woman said, well, that's a good question, but I never really got that answered either.
Yeah, I'm starting to think we need to get someone from the Board of Elections on here. But anyways, okay. Well, it's a good question, Joanne. It's a really interesting question.
Yeah, I don't think that I agree with Laura. I don't think that's probably permissible.
With the word vote in it.
Yeah. The problem is, you know, actually getting your complaint to her to the right person and having that person, you know,
well, gosh, should it be that
action.
Hard?
But, I mean, I would always, you know, if nothing else, if you call the party headquarters for whatever, either party, you know, if there was a vote pro-choice sign up and, you know, you wanted to call the Republican Party about that, I think those folks, they know quickly how to get in touch with the right people. And they have lawyers all over the place who are
yeah,
ready,
I mean,
to take action if necessary.
If it really bothers you, I would say call Planned Parenthood or... If it was a vote pro-choice, then you could call
that hotline that Peg
right.
mentioned, the 866-OUR-VOTE.
Yeah.
O-U-R-V-O-T-E.
866-OUR-VOTE, O-U-R-V-O-T-E, right. Joanne, thanks a lot for that call. It's an interesting question. Email from Gail. How does a write-in vote work at the local polling place? Do you have to ask for a list of registered write-in candidates? How does it work with the electronic voting? That's a good question. There must be a paper ballot.
Yeah, I should know the answer to this. I feel silly I don't, but I don't know, to be honest. I've never written in anyone, so I don't know exactly how it works in an electronic voting booth county. We've certainly had some elected officials, including our governor, saying they're going to write in people. So clearly there's going to have to be some way
to
do it.
There's a write in, but
now
how
there's
do you
also,
do it?
I believe there's also a law that says, you know, you have to be registered as a write in. You can't just, if you write in someone who's not on the ballot as a write in, then it won't count. I don't think it'll count.
It doesn't count.
It doesn't.
For example, Rob Portman says he's going to vote for Mike Pence for president. So
right. He's
Donald
not
Trump.
On the ballot as
he's
president.
Not the, yeah, so it's
that's
not
what
count.
I was thinking of was Portman. But yeah, like Evan McMullen is, I believe—
From Utah guy.
Yeah, the independent presidential candidate. I believe you can write him in and it'll count in Ohio, but he's not on the ballot.
Right.
But I believe he's a write-in.
Another question. Okay. An email from Michael. I have three nieces who have grown up in France with dual U.S. French citizenship, but who lived with me at my current address for a short time many years ago. Is it legal for them to use my address as their American residence in order to exercise their right as American citizens to vote? Apparently a U.S. address is required, and it sounds like that's what Peg said from—
Was that Peg or somebody else who was saying that was responding to the letter carrier who—
I thought it was Peg, but we don't know who our experts are now. Maybe we need to just – this is getting pretty technical.
Well, I did find the Pickaway County Board of Elections director told the Circleville Herald that as far as electronic voting and writing in a candidate, you select the write-in box like you would anyone else, and a keyboard pops up. on the screen.
And then you magical. Can type,
yeah, magical. It's just like sending a text exciting. Message, okay. right?
And you don't have to try to read someone's handwriting? What's the fun in that?
Yeah. No hanging chads either. So, all right. Well, that answered that question. That's good to know. We don't know about that exactly, but I think it is legal for them to vote.
It sounds like from one of the callers who said that military and
right.
overseas citizens are allowed to vote from the residence they consider their last address.
Last legal address.
Right.
Okay. Brad in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Brad.
Oh, hello. This is not a technical question.
Good.
Considering that voter suppression over time has been much more of a significant problem than voter fraud, isn't it true that the Republican Party is the only major party in American history to be convicted in a court of law of voter suppression and has a current consent decree against it?
Well, there is a consent decree. I know that. I'm not sure if it was a criminal I'm not sure about the details of that, Brad. But there is a consent decree out there in some of the states, I think, that it was affected by that. Again, this is just telling me that we need to be more thorough in our casting of a show like this.
Exactly.
Because they're not experts. They just, they're state house reporters. So, but maybe we get to that. We only have a few minutes left. Maybe we stop the voter questions and consider a show about that later and just chat briefly about does Donald Trump, who's fallen precipitously in the polls now, it looks like Hillary Clinton has a double-digit lead over him nationally. What do you make of that? Is there a way back for him? Laura Bischoff.
Well, it sounds like Hillary Clinton is in the Democratic Party is really pushing early vote so that they can kind of make it almost impossible for Donald Trump to come back. Now, there's 15 days left in the election. Anything could happen, but it seems highly unlikely that Donald Trump's going to pull out a win. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at I was just checking this morning on Larry Sabato runs the University of Virginia Center for Politics. He's highly respected. He does what's called his crystal ball. And right now he has Clinton. If you count all states that are either safe, likely, or leaning her way, she has 352 electoral college votes. You know, you need 270 to win. Donald Trump has 173. He only has two states right now as toss-ups, Iowa and Utah. And frankly, Utah right now is going, if you believe the latest polls, that's going for Evan McMullen, mm-hmm. The independent. So that could be out of both of their columns. Now if you just count the states where it's safe or likely, those are the most likely ones for her to win. She's at 258. I've heard others say she's at 272 if you count those. But Larry Sabato has her at 258. And really, and in that case, if she, let's just say she's at 258, if you go by the map he had, she could lose, Hillary Clinton could lose Ohio, Florida, Iowa, Nevada, Arizona, and New Hampshire and still win. And so that's the kind of uphill climb he's looking at right now. And it's hard to imagine that he'll make that up, but you know, it's all about, you know, maybe the polls are just way off this year.
Well, that's why you're seeing Trump and running mate Mike Pence in Ohio quite a bit in the last week. And even I think tomorrow Mike Pence is in Ohio. And he made a comment within the last week that he is going to go hard in all these states so that at the end he can, you know, say at least I, you know, did what I could do. There was nothing left on the table. So he certainly has not given up. And I think we'll continue to see him multiple times before Election Day.
Yeah. And it looks like Hillary Clinton's taking advantage of this by campaigning in states that were somewhat unexpected, like Arizona.
Yeah, I think she wants to run up the score and try and bring along Democratic candidates for the U.S. Senate so that she has control, that the Democrats have the control of the Senate and she's able to, you know, get more of her legislative agenda through.
Yeah, I think both she and President Obama are both starting to focus more down ticket. Larry Sabato, again, he had his count. The Senate right now is at 47-47 with that would be two. There's two Democratic pickups. And then that leaves six seats that are currently toss up. So, frankly, if Hillary Clinton wins and the Democrats get three of those six, they'll control the Senate because it'll be 50-50. Vice president will break the ties.
Thank you, Jim Siegel from the Columbus Dispatch, Laura Bischoff from the Dayton Daily News, and Jackie Borchardt from Cleveland.com. Thanks to all of you for joining us today. And thanks to everybody for your questions, for your calls, and your emails. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.